and welcome to the Listening at Warwick podcast. In this episode, Des and Ian chat about how adversity has bred creativity and how COVID could be a catalyst for change. They quickly come to some big questions. What is the function of a university? What is the nature of learning? How can we teach to create wisdom? And will cliques replace bricks?
Hi, I'm Des Hewitt. I'm head of primary and early years teacher education in the Centre for Teacher Education, a bit of a mouthful, at Warwick. We're broadly about training primary school teachers. I've got about 200 or so teachers. I'm also director of education for the department, so I oversee a lot of the sort of QA type of work and this type of stuff as well.
Hello, I'm Ian Day. So I work at the Centre for Lifelong Learning, and I run the coaching courses. So these tend to be for adult learners that are external to the university that come and join us for either a certificate diploma or postgraduate courses.
I think there's a saying that says that creativity thrives on adversity.
Yes.
And there is something, isn't it, that, you know, when you can't do something, I mean, for us, we had COVID, we had like increased student numbers and, you know, the sort of the impact on financially on the university of, you know, the COVID and all this sort of stuff. So there was bit of a sort of perfect storm of sort of factors coming together, and especially when you're a manager as well, you know, you've got to stay positive and be constructive in solutions to that, and I think that's what we've done. And I think actually, you know, being creative and innovative through the use of technology has been one way ahead, you know. And of course I think it is here to stay. I don't know what your thoughts are, Ian, but you know, you work in a kind of sector where it's around coaching, it's around personal, you know, human contact as well. Mm. I work in teacher education, and I would thought there's something quite similar between the two.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is interesting. I think once we've, technology only goes in one direction, and I think once you've tried it, we don't go back. So I think we've made a step change, and I think what COVID has done, and lockdown, and working remotely has done, it's accelerated the use of technology by a number of years significantly, because we probably would have stayed pretty much the same if it wasn't for this imposed change. Mm-hmm. And in a way, I think that's been quite good, because I've come from outside of the university. You know, I've worked in organizations in sort of human resources and consultancy for 20 years, and I sort of came to the university a number of years ago, and I look around and thinking, well, people are still sitting in lecture theatres? Oh, well, I did that when I was doing my first degree. What's changed? And I think this has now forced a change, which is really quite interesting, because I was thinking, well, why do 300 people have to go and sit in a lecture theatre? Can't you watch that on YouTube? Mm-hmm. And I think it's just forcing a change, and we can use a lot of the things that are good. And I suppose my concern, and we're going to your point, Des, coaching is very much about that interaction, and teaching is as well, that sort of practice and doing things interactively in the classroom and practicing skills as well as understanding the theory. And I suppose my concern was, how do we overcome that in a virtual world, the remote access, where a lot about coaching is establishing a relationship of trust. Mm-hmm. And how do we do that remotely online? And I think it's just that awareness of what else we need to do, mm-hmm, in addition, mm-hmm, to what we do in a classroom to make this effective online. And I think that's been the challenge over the last academic year, really, is to try and be consciously aware of these things and reinforce them. Mm-hmm.
I think there's also, I always think, you know, that it's always lovely to see. I mean, I'd love us to be in a room now having a chat with a microphone in front of us, but actually there's a sense of cost and benefits, isn't it?
Yeah.
The cost could be, as you know, I said to a group that I'm meeting with, you know, next year, should we meet online or should we meet face-to-face? And they said, well, yes. Des, if we mainly work at home for certain days, do you want us to have to spend an hour coming in on the train or an hour in the car, you know, each way sort of thing? So that the cost is the travel time and the benefit is the sort of the human contact. So actually a blended approach there makes a lot of sense, so that, you know, maybe one out of three of those meetings across the year is more face-to-face. But, you know, I think that there's a huge amount that we can still do. And actually there's a sort of reduction of benefits in things like, you know, us meeting face to face now as opposed to online. You know, I don't think we're missing out too much by doing this online, as opposed to not having a meeting at all. When, you know, so actually things like, you know, coaching, or, you know, when we meet our students when they're on placement, being able to have that contact without having to travel down the M42, or to, you know, to negotiate a time at 4:30 when they would normally be going home, for instance, but actually sits really, really well for them, I think is one of the huge advantages.
Yeah. I think it's particularly for the students that I tend to work with, who are sort of adult learners. So it's part-time course. So they tend to be people who work or have family commitments. And so they fit in the sessions at Warwick in between all their other commitments. And so, and they come from all over the country as well. So them commuting, some can be very local, so some can travel from Leamington to Warwick, which is absolutely great, but other people travel from Sussex and Northumberland and things like that, and you think they're absolutely exhausted with that travel before they've got into the classroom. So it can be so much better to have this situation, so people are relaxed in their own they're in a comfortable environment. Mm. And I talked to students about what would you like to do next year? How would you like to approach it? Because we were thinking, well, with the Delta variant, how do we manage this? What would you do if you had to do this again? What lessons would you learn? And they said, well, it worked, but it'd be good to do things face-to-face to start off with, if COVID allows, if possible. So you can establish that trust, you can establish those relationships, you can have those casual conversations in between the formal teaching sessions. So you can start off face to face and then you can go online. And they were saying, if there's that nice balance, that would work. That would work fine. I think what some people found was being purely online was difficult to establish those relationships. So I suppose
what I was going to say is, one of the things you're touching on is that the social and emotional aspect and the relational aspect between, you know, tutors and their students, or tutors and tutors.
Yes.
Or, you know, administrative staff and academic staff as well. And that's the bit I'm not completely sure that I've sort of worked my way through in terms of how do you do that electronically. I mean, you can do. We can pick up the phone, or we can have a chat through Teams like we're doing now. But there's nothing like physically being in the room. So, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, what we've done for RPC next year, in terms of what we learned from this year, is whereas last year we did our induction entirely online, we're doing it in a mixed. So we're staying below the sort of 20 in a room, sort of room capacity that we think we've got at the moment. But we're going to have our personal tutors managing the first 2 days. So it's sort of about 5 days worth of induction. And the students are going to stay with their personal tutor and be taught by that personal tutor for all of their work in the first couple of days. And that's a nice way to have that sort of, you know, personal, professional interaction together in a way that's safe. Because I think, you know, the uncertainty and anxiety is around medical issues as well for a lot of students and staff as well. So I think that's where we want to go back to some face-to-face work, but doing a sort of measured, sort of cautious way, which, you know, when I look at the media, the sort of the key thing I sort of think I take from the media is that people want to get back to some sort of normal, but in a sort of cautious, measured sort of way.
I think that's an interesting point, isn't it? A cautious, measured approach, because it is that a conscious choice. I think that's the thing. We don't just fall into the old habit of going back to how it was 18 months ago, but we make a conscious choice of how best to do it. The world has changed, and we need to adapt, and we need to recognise that. But that conscious choice about how we deal with things, what are we going to do face-to-face that needs to be face-to-face versus what can we do online? And we've demonstrated that it works online. So I think there is that conscious choice of approaches that I think is something that we can be aware of. So we have got choices to start off with. And maybe 12 months ago, 18 months ago, maybe we didn't know we had choices because it was all face-to-face. But I think we're aware of it now, that we can choose face-to-face versus online and different styles of doing things online.
I've always been interested. This sounds slightly left field, but go with it for a moment. Is that I've been interested, what's the function of a university? Is it about a physical space and an estate, if you like? And I say this with sort of technology in mind, but also a sense of, you know, what is the university brand, which I think is something about being physically there, but maybe about being virtually there as well. But I also say that in the light of, you know, things like climate change and the carbon footprint, that if you've got 20,000 plus people coming into a space each day, I don't know, you know, a lot of them might have at least 10 miles or so they're driving each way. That mounts up to quite a few carbon miles for each day. And if that's only for even only, I don't know, 30 weeks across the year, that mounts up to quite a lot, doesn't it? So I think for me, what's happening at the moment isn't just about COVID. It's about, you know, we're all sitting here, me sweltering my conservatory here on a hot day with 29 degrees outside. And we're all thinking, well, actually, you know, there's COVID going on, but there's climates and other things we need to be thinking about. And sustainability, I think, will be a key thing for the future. And that's not just the climate and energy and travel and this type of thing, but it's emotional sustainability. I don't know, it made you think about sort of wider things in life as well.
Well, yes, it has. I mean, if you think about what's been happening in the high streets, you know, the clicks versus bricks style of things for shops and the high streets, and the fact that COVID has forced people to go online, and there's been negative implications for our shopping centres and our high streets. But you've got to think, well, that's forced an evolution in the way people have shopped. And maybe there's a similar way in people, the way people are educated and learn. Do we need a physical institution of a university as if it was a high street shop, or can we do it online? So people don't have to have the same environmental impact, and they can do it in their family environment. And I do wonder about that. Is it the clicks versus bricks? Is it a similar thing that we could be facing in years to come with education and development? And that's an interesting point. But again, there is that power of, well, for certainly for undergraduates, the university experience, the rite of passage, as it might be. But again, for the students that I tend to work with, they've done that. They've done that once before, typically. So they're not interested in the experience of being on campus and the social elements of learning and developing a social life in a university campus. They're here for a focus of development. So the social elements of being face to face is less important for them. So again, whether there's a blended approach that comes to this, I'm not too certain. But I think we do need to look at, what does this mean? The clicks versus bricks that the retailers have noticed. What does that mean for us? And I don't know. I think we've got to acknowledge that there is this change, and just thinking it's going to go back to how it was, and people are going to want to travel to the institutions. I'm not too certain whether that's going to be the same as it was in the past. But it's an interesting thing to be consciously aware of.
Would you say, Ian, that a lot of this stuff around COVID and everything is just accelerated what was already going to be happening, or is this something new in the mix, and this is sort of you know, the Lord of Misrule and chaos that's come into our lives to upset things, that's changing things? Or do you think that, as people might say about the high street, that was always happening, the move towards retail online, all this sort of stuff was a sort of a progression, and COVID has just speeded this up?
I think it might be more of a surprise for educational institutions. So maybe there was the view that we were impervious to this sort of change, that the impact that Google had had on Marks and Spencers and whatever. But I think it is coming. It is coming. But maybe it could be seen more of a revolution rather than an evolution. With the high street, it was definitely an evolution that had been occurring for a number of years and is going to continue. So that was an evolution, a gradual evolution. Almost like for the universities, it could be a revolution. So that could be quite shocking and fearful, and seem almost like an aggressive dismantling of the institutions. But I think I think it's coming, and it's how do we embrace that rather than deny it? And if we deny it, I think we'll probably see, as we've seen with other parts of the industry, we'll see disruptors coming in and surprising us with innovative ways of doing things that we haven't. And I know with coaching, there are private providers that offering online courses that are accredited by other universities. And so we've got that competition. But I think it's something, again, we need to be aware of rather than deny and ignore and pretend it's not happening, because it is.
I think the interesting thing is, what is the nature of learning and knowledge?
Yeah.
If universities are fundamentally about learning and knowledge, and actually, I wouldn't say it's not just about what you do at higher education, but, you know, in local colleges and schools, and, you know, we've got our own massive nursery on campus as well, which is fascinating. And, you know, for me, what is the nature of learning? Is it you, Ian, you are a fantastic guy, you've got all this amazing knowledge, and you transfer it like a big wheelbarrow onto someone else? Or is, which I suspect is the case, you know, you probably might be into instructional coaching, which is about, you know, less prescriptive approaches, which is about bringing it out of people. Mm. So, you know, as I know, for instance, in IATL in Warwick, they're quite into the nature of co-created learning.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So seeing learning as not just an object that is transferred from one person to another.
Yeah.
But you know, we've all got skills, knowledge, experiences. We want something to bring to the piece. I think, you know, I think when there's a level of respect from learner to teacher and from teacher to learner, we all respect what each of those individuals can bring to to the experience. And I think when we look at a changing relationship in the power, control and status of the teacher and the learner, I mean, I could probably say in schools, although it's more difficult in schools where there's a sort of political impetus for a certain type of learning. But I think in universities where there is a level of freedom that you can open learning up, so it's a more of a shared experience, more difficult, because I think the easy thing to do is just to have this sort of transmission model of learning where, you know, I teach it, here's a PowerPoint, it's asynchronous, whatever you want to do. Read that, you know, complete the assignments based a lot on what I've said in the PowerPoint and what I've told you to read. But actually, is that what companies want for the future? Is that what digital enterprises want for the future, where, you know, they're going to be major employers for the future? They want people who are creative thinkers,
yes,
who can, you know, look at problem solving, might be exposed to case-based approaches to learning as well. That's why I think we've got an awful lot to learn about learning.
Yeah,
in higher education. I don't know what your thoughts are about that.
Well, yeah, as I said, I came from a professional background working in human resources, and I was head of talent and focused on leadership development for a number of years. And it was almost like for people who were new on their career ladder, relatively junior, although I don't like that word, but relatively junior within an organisation, it was about knowledge and transferring knowledge. So they became technically capable. They were able to do their jobs. But as people went more higher into an organization and they took on more leadership roles, it was about developing wisdom. Mm. And it was almost like, how did they consciously make decisions? How did they sense make? How did they problem solve? And as developers, as educators, how do we develop? How do we teach wisdom? So we've got more effective leadership within organisations and society because people are able to make wiser decisions. So I think there's a really interesting thing to think about. What's the role of universities and education in terms of not just developing skills and knowledge, but also in terms of developing wisdom? And that's the sort of the stuff in the ether that you can't touch. And certainly when I'm working with my students, again, they're adult learners, so they've worked for a number of years. So I tend to think about that when we come together, it's a learning from experts. So we're all together virtually or face to face, and I'm learning from experts, and hopefully they're learning from me as well. So I'm involved in this. I'm learning as much as they are, but we're all here as experts to make a contribution and to learn. So it's not me downloading my knowledge, because they could read that in a book or they can watch that on YouTube. But it's us discussing, problem solving, creating. So that, this co-creation of education is so, so important. And I think this, you've got it really interesting, Des. It's a really interesting way of developing wisdom through that co-creation. And I think that's what we need for the future. It's not just knowledge. It is wisdom.
I do love the concept of wisdom. It's not a bad thing to at least aim for and aspire to. And I've always sort of defined wisdom with my students as being knowledge tinged by experience.
Yes.
But I also think with wisdom, it goes beyond knowledge, because there's a sense of, you know, that you are seeking to achieve noble aims and maybe more socially just aims as well. And I think in the society we live in at the moment, that's a great aspiration.
Yeah.
And we should question who we are and where we come from. And, you know, where power, control and status has resided in the past, that sort of contributes to the standing of programs and the standing of knowledge as well. But I think that sort of shifting sands, if you like, and realignment of balancing, if you like, of power and control between academic and student is really, really important. I personally think that should happen from undergraduate onwards. So I don't think it's a question of, like, you know, the more you've been on the program, the more power and control you get. But I think it needs to be with freedom and sort of level of status, if you want to call it that, comes responsibility as well and respect. Yes. So I think, you know, I'm all for, I always say to people, you know, there's one thing that's really important, which I hope comes through how we've used technology this year as well, is that we always treat people decently. And I think if we have that sort of maxim, in terms of our respect that we have for each other as academics and as students as well, I think we can actually take knowledge and learning in a really, really good direction, whatever the discipline as well, because I think we're doing things for the right reason. And also that there's a level of respect and commitment from academics towards their students, which I know there is, but it's really important to recognise that, to aspire to that. And especially, I think, you know, when we're looking at a screen, and sometimes that sort of social and emotional dimension isn't always, doesn't maybe, there's not a button that flickers on the screen for that, in terms of, you know, social emotional interference or anything. But it's really, really important. And, you know, whether that comes through face-to-face experiences, or if there's some means that we can think about how do we achieve that. So I think this kind of COVID wrecking ball that's coming our direction has helped us in some respects just question what we do.
Yes.
And rather than saying, well, we're doing this because we've always done it, which is not a good answer, but actually just to think about, you know, doing things in a different way and questioning some of the sort of basic foundations that have been there with either schools or universities, it's not a bad thing to be thinking about, really. I mean, I also, because I mean, you look to me, Ian, like a young man, but I'm close to my late 50s. And I'm thinking, well, you know,
I'm not far off that.
how long will I be in university education or education more generally? So you have that sort of perspective of looking back over the last 20 years, having worked in universities, or 10 years before that in schools. And you know, despite what's happened this year, I feel even more passionate and excited about education and wanting to learn even more about where we are. So I don't feel... Even the huge changes that are coming politically and, you know, economically and everything, and that may come through technologically in universities, maybe it's my personality, but I'm just fascinated by what's on the horizon. And even in my sort of, you know, later 50s, I'm still so looking forward to what's coming up next year, even though it's probably more uncertain than this year. And I don't know, as a young man, Ian, I don't know, what would you say to that?
Well, it's very kind of you to describe me as a young man, Des, but I'm not that different to you, actually. But it is that, yeah, I'm 55 now, so it is that orientation, I think, towards change and possibility and new ways of doing things. And there can be the uncertainty that is threatening, And there can be the uncertainty that is quite exciting, because it's almost like explorer. We've got the possibility of exploring and finding new opportunities and new ways of doing things. But there's a threat. And I suppose it comes back to sort of how people are orientated towards that change on an emotional level. So how do they feel about it emotionally? And then physically, what's the sort of the infrastructure, the technology that they're provided with? And as I said, going back to the beginning of the call, when I talked about my three words, and the first word was frustration. That was because I couldn't get the technology to work. I was, you know, in a rush. I was working at home, and I couldn't get the technology to work. I couldn't get access to the files, and it, you know, there was a bit of frustration of getting the kit working to start off with. But once I'd settled through that bit, then it was great. It fine became the new normal. But there is that thing about, have we got the technology to enable people to work in this new flexible way and continuing to evolve that? And are people emotionally confident, comfortable with the new change so they can embrace the technology that's there? So I think we've got the emotional level, and we've got the technological tools that enable people to do stuff. Thanks very much for arranging this. It's been great. And it does. Thank you for engaging in the discussion. I think it has been a really interesting conversation. And I think after the project, maybe it's something we could do more of, because just having a conversation with a colleague from a different part of the university that I might not meet or engage in a conversation particularly often, I think it's worthwhile, because we get that sharing of knowledge, those just common ideas, just bouncing ideas off each other. I think it's absolutely fantastic. So thank you very much for the opportunity to talk, and it's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, from my side as well, I've always loved speaking to Jenny and yourself, Ian, as well. I find that's one of the raison d'etre, if you like, for me, for working in university, is I love my subject and teacher education. I love all that stuff. I particularly like talking to people from different disciplines, different departments. And for me, that's what brings my professional, but also, you know, emotional life alive, as well as is having that connection with other people. And I mean, it's not quite the same as being in the same room, but it nearly makes up for it, having a conversation online like this. So, you know, I completely agree. And I think, you know, it's great. And maybe it might be interesting for other people to listen to this on a podcast, but I think to set up those conversations between people is a really, really good thing to do in a university, because that, I think, is what we're about. We're about learning conversations.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this Listening at Warwick podcast. We have lots more episodes discussing blended and online learning at the University of Warwick. So until next time.